Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. Today we bring you part two of our El Cajon City Council candidate forum for those running in District 2. The forum was recorded on September 30th. Last week we aired part one, where the candidates talked about issues ranging from homelessness to the future of Parkway Plaza to police issues. And today we're back with part two with many more issues. You can find both parts one and part two at eastcountymagazine.org, including video. And we thank the Facebook Journalism Project for supporting our series of candidate forums. And now let's go to the middle of our candidate forum, starting with part two. And the candidates are Humbert Cabrera, Stephanie Harper, Michelle Mitchell, Martin Van Denteren, and Juan Carlos Mercado, or Charlie as he goes by. John Sepulveda, my co-host, will be asking the first round of questions in this half. John has a couple of business questions that he's going to ask, and I think we can do these in about a minute and a half. I think Humbert would go first on this one.
I wanted to spend a few seconds actually saying that it is centralized. The homelessness is actually in the crisis house. We actually have a central location, then it goes to the little house and goes to CASA group, and it goes to all the other groups. There is a place where it's centralized.
Okay, thank you very much.
As far as businesses go, what was the question?
John, go ahead.
Thanks. So as we all know, the pandemic has taken a big toll on the economy here. Specifically, what are you going to do to bring more businesses and what types of businesses to El Cajon to help increase foot traffic, help increase commerce? Martin, we'll start with you.
Terrific. I believe that what's been done in other cities is to close down Main Street. You know, there's always issues of safety, egress, fire, so forth and so on. But I really believe that if we could start by just shutting down Main Street and allow the people to go and take advantage of this center section and open their business up fully so that they can participate in what they need to generate the income to survive and get through this. And maybe perhaps if it worked out, let it stay, let it run. Maybe other districts may be interested in doing it. You know, I've seen it, and I drive down Main Street. It's absolutely sad. You know, I really think, and I know that there'll be some opposition. I know there's issues with fire. I dealt with fire, but there's always a way if there's a will. And I think it would be a great idea and a good way to help out those people, at least in that area, and then let it expand.
Thank you. Michelle, we heard from Martin. He said that he would corridor off Main Street. Do you think that's a good idea? And what kind of businesses would you like to bring?
I'd like to see Main Street open. I think I understand what Martin is trying to say as far as like closing down Main Street and having restaurants come out more into the street and so that it would be closed off. That would work. My idea for bringing in new businesses, I'd like to see some more specialty shops, maybe a specialty card shop, a candle shop. We have lots of clothing. We have lots of cars. We have lots of restaurants. We always use another ethnic restaurant. We have lots of grocery stores, little markets. So I think we just need to reduce regulations, reduce the process to getting a business license and setting up a business in our home. We just need to streamline it and make it easier.
Thank you so much, Michelle. We'll go now to Charlie. You heard from Michelle right there. She says she wants to bring more artisanal type. Sounds like cute businesses with the card shops and the rest. How do you think about her? What do you think about her vision, and how do you think is best to proceed for El Cajon?
I think I share a tiny bit of offering answer. I have a passion for the arts, and I believe if we have. We need galleries, art galleries. I think that's something that we need. I work around that environment, And a lot of the artists throughout San Diego County and outside of San Diego County, they're in search of galleries. And I think that's something that would promote a positive image, a better image, you know, of for El Cajon. And at the same time, modernize. You, that's another thing that I think we're lacking. So those two areas, I think, would definitely create a, get things started and then snowball into better and greater things and make El Cajon better and welcome, you know, bring in not just people that want to do business here, but people that will come in, see El Cajon and you know, buy things and boost the economy in El Cajon.
Thank you so much. And we'll end with you, Humbert. Your challenger just said that wants to bring in more artists and cultural type events. At the same time, we know that that often leads to gentrification. One needs to only go as far as Barrio Logan to see that as the case. Where do you stand on the vision for El Cajon's business future?
Well, in some cases, you see things like Little Italy also, which is a gentrification, but it's a successful one. You can have something like a Middle Eastern community kind of a thing that's more formal with waterfalls and that kind of thing. But I would, if you want me to answer directly about Juan's statement, bring it all in. My company is a design, drafting, architectural firm. We actually do have another company that's an El Cajon that actually does construction development, loans, and this kind of thing. We chose to base our company in El Cajon because East County is great. El Cajon is fantastic. Other people need to learn it. And I'll tell you how you do it. You do it like I did with Fox Shocks. You talk to the CEOs. You take, bring them out here. You take them to the desert. You take them to the places. You introduce them to the Chamber of Commerce. You introduce them to all the groups that I belong to. And you make them a family member of El Cajon. And before they know it, they love the place. So this is how you do it. But I'll tell you what else you have to do. You have to get rid of a lot of regulation. There's
Humbert,
too regulation.
We are at time.
Thank okay.
I appreciate the enthusiasm. Stephanie, I don't know if you were able to hear the question, but we've been talking about visions for El Cajon. Everyone wants to see you know, more cultural events, kind of more boutique shops. Do you agree with that? And I'm curious because no one's talked about this, and this leads into our next question of Parkway Plaza. Should there be more big box shops or more corporate shops in El Cajon?
Well, I was raised in El Cajon, so I went to the mall all the time. I was a mall rat, I guess you would call it. I remember Farrell's, and I was at the AMC all the time down there at Parkway Bowl. We had Family Fun Center. We had things that you could go and do. We've taken those things away from El Cajon. We don't have the Farrell's anymore where you can go and go to have a good time for a birthday party, or we don't have the Boomers or the Family Fun Center like we used to with the water slides and things like that. We got to give people a reason to want to come into El Cajon. We're a beautiful city full of diversity. They could go to this part of town or this part of town. We need to utilize what we have. We need to utilize the Performing Arts Center, get that going again, get that open up, then make that one of the best places to, for people to go on the, in the East County. That's the place to go to watch your shows and have a lot of innovative things. Bring our children into bringing people into our city. I know that we're trying to be an automotive city, like all the, you know, the car lots that we have. But if we're going to do that, let's help the little car lot guys out, put them out there and give them a little bit more gumption to get their businesses going. Somebody wants to start off and open a small business. Wonderful. I think we do really good.
Thank you so much. Martin, should Parkway Plaza be developed, turned into a residential area? Yes or no, in 30 seconds of why?
No, and it's gotten too big. As a building inspector, I know what's going on in there and the storage that they wanted to do and that they're doing now. It's just getting too commercialized. I think it's too big. The store is too big to begin with, and it's still too big.
Thank you so much, Stephanie. What Parkway Plaza situation.
Yeah, and I just want to jump in and add some context for those who may not be familiar that the mall did sell, and there's some question about what the new owners want to do with it. The Wall Street Journal had an article that suggested that they may not want it to be a regional mall. They may want to tear it down and do something else, and But the city council has a say-so about that. And so the question really, I guess, is what do you think should or shouldn't be considered for the future of Parkway Plaza? So just for those who may not be familiar, go ahead.
I believe that Parkway Plaza is a very vital organ in our community. It wasn't that big when we had the Woolworths and everything there, but it was enough to where people wanted to go shopping. Maybe some people wanted to build it up to one of those nice big old fashioned malls where they have the two levels or whatever. But I know that we've got some kind of construction going on underneath it, a storage units or something like that. I don't really think that's going to work out, but I would want to keep it in El Cajon. I definitely think that we should keep our mall. It's a place where people go to walk around, just to walk around the mall, just to get out of the sun, get some nice air conditioning. Most of all, a lot of our senior citizens, our children, we feel safe in there. I think we should keep it.
Thank you. Michelle.
Parkway Plaza, yes, it needs to remain. Now, if they want to add a second story and add, say, artist lofts or recording studios, or maybe a little section with some, you know, higher end apartments, why not? Keep it there, but keep Parkway Plaza. It's a cool zone for seniors. It's a walking area for seniors and young moms. Yes, keep Parkway Plaza.
Humbert.
I would say that my business is actually in Parkway Plaza, but I would say there's no new construction going on downstairs. It's actually the existing Sears area. So as far as it goes, I actually spoke to some of the people at JLL and Starwood, and I actually called some of the new owners. So I'm trying to get some more information, because I'm getting mixed information from all three. I know that Miriam broke the story. I'm glad about that. I would not allow it to change the zoning, but however, I would make the zoning easier, and I would do something like a UTC where you have mixed use,
all right,
and that kind of thing.
Thank you so
much. I would leave Parkway Plaza and actually allow other businesses that are service-oriented and or apartments, condos.
Thank you. An interesting thing I learned today, by the way, from the city manager is that actually the new owners don't own quite all of the mall. They don't own Macy's and they don't own the Sears building. And I think there was something else in there. But anyway, so there is a possibility that, you know, they'd have to be.
Yeah.
Charlie, you're the last one to weigh in.
Yes, definitely. Keep the mall, reinvent it, bring in investors, the owners, community, and bring in those areas that we talked about, galleries, sports, community center. It's just a golden opportunity to make it better and provide more assets to the community, happier, not just El Cajon, but everyone in San Diego County and even outside of San Diego.
Thank you so much. There was a study recently by the New York Times showing that the United States has lost $16 trillion, trillion with a T, over the past 50 years because of racial segregation and racial discrimination. We heard President Trump refuse to condemn white nationalism and endorse a transfer of power that is peaceful. This has become top of mind in East County. I've been reading message boards all day. I've been seeing the back and forth. Where do you stand on this issue of condemning white supremacy? I really want to know how you felt while you watched it and what you thought. Keep it to about 30 seconds. Basically, I'm asking for your reaction to the failure to condemn white supremacy in the debate. We'll start with you, Mark.
Very good. Well, I definitely condemn it. There's no place for it. I find it very upsetting that people can't just be honest. So here we have the five of us talking, and we've all been honest. We're not hiding anything. We all have an opinion. And I think that's good and fair. And for them to be on stage and not to clearly identify the issues and the problems and the feelings that they have is wrong, and I think that's a mistake, and I didn't like it.
Thank you so much. Charlie.
Yes, zero tolerance. I've been very passionate my whole life and more so, you know, my experience is dealing with the population within the correctional system in San Diego County. Zero tolerance. No, you know, I have firsthand knowledge of who some of the members are with white supremacy, Nazi lowriders, you know. And the list goes on and on. And so I have zero tolerance for that. strong advocate of diversity. El Cajon is very diverse, and we need to be proud of that, and we need to promote that.
Thank you. Humbert, what's your stance on this, and how did you feel when you heard the President of the United States unable to?
I felt it needed to be clarified. He did clarify it today. I did also not like the fact that Joe Biden did not denounce Antifa. I think both of them are paralyzed. There is no reason for having white supremacy. And I think it's not just racism, it's white supremacy. I'm not taking money from the Good Old Boys Network. I want everybody to know that. Others are. I don't think it should. And I'm going to get a lot of terrible things done to me and my family. My signs are being taken down and all this other kind of stuff. And it's not just the Catholic churches. I am a Catholic, by the way, and I do support all sorts of great diversity that El Cajon always has been. I've been here my entire life. I know that we used to have the boat people. We used to have the Asian people. We had the people from Iran. And it's been a great place for people to plant their seeds and then grow.
Humbert, I just want to make sure I understand you clearly. You dispute the fact that President Trump refused to denounce white nationalism.
No, I said that I don't agree with it. I don't think there's any room for white nationalism. But he did try to clarify that today, and I didn't see any clarification from Joe Biden about Antifa, and Antifa is just as bad.
Okay, I needed to make sure I understood where you stood on white nationalism. Michelle, you've heard the question. How did you feel about it, and what is your response?
I think the president should have denounced white power. I don't believe that we should have any tolerance for any type of racism, period.
Thank you. Stephanie?
I have to agree with Michelle. I don't believe that there's racism. It has a place in our government. The law needs to be blind and not deaf, and the government should be the same way. We need to, no white people are better than anybody else. No Latino people are better than anybody else. We're all the same. When you turn off the lights, we're all the same.
Thank you so much, everyone. Miriam.
Moving on to the arts. The city invested a lot to reopen the East County Performing Arts Center, now known as Magnolia, under the management of Live Nation. And then the pandemic forced the shutdown again. So I'd like you each to let us know, will you commit to continue city support of the Magnolia under Live Nation's management? Make sure that we can continue to have the theater as a community theater once live shows are allowed to resume.
By all means, I love the arts. I promote the arts, and let's do more with the arts. If we don't have live shows, let's open up that space for galleries. You know, with limited space, maintaining safe space and mask, and have a gallery opening. If not daily, at least once a week, we can keep things going. There's definitely we can keep it going. Yes.
Thank you. Stephanie.
Well, I know here in District 2, we just got done remodeling the El Cajon Valley High School, so we took down the little theater. I believe that our children have a lot of talent in District 2, and I believe that when we're not doing live shows, we could maybe teach our children, since we don't have the little theater anymore, to run a stage, to do soundboard, to maybe get interested in something that they might pursue in their lifetime. I think that the arts is great, and we should utilize it in any way we can. I fought to keep it open and not let it become a hotel or a church. So I'm very, very adamant about keeping the arts in El Cajon. Although I didn't like the new name, hey, that's okay.
Very good. Humbert, how about you?
Well, I was born in El Cajon and raised in El Cajon with my five other siblings and my grandmother. And I raised my three girls in El Cajon, and now I'm raising my fourth one. And I'll tell you what, the arts and artistry are the most important thing. I love the Olive Weehorse Museum. I love the arts. And I like the fact that we have that here, and I would continue to support it. And I would support more of that kind of thing. The animal shelter also is something great. But I would also continue to support the arts.
Thank you. Martin, your views on the Magnolia.
Well, I have a different perspective. So I knew what went on there as far as the building was concerned. I know about the budget issues. It was way over budget. There's still some issues with it for egress on the inside. I don't like the idea of the name change. I don't like the idea of having other districts use it. It's for El Cajon. It was called ECPAC. And now it's the Magnolia, and they're trying to draft in other monies. They've gotten to the point now where I believe it costs $5,000 for an opening to have that, you know, set up so that people can use it. Do you think small schools and small things can get in there and come up with that kind of money to use that thing for a night? I think there needs to be going some thought into this and find out what happened, why it happened, and see if we can get it corrected so that it goes back to the people of El Cajon since they paid for it.
So to be clear, you want to keep it as a theater, but you think that it should be less money for community groups that want to use it, someone other than Live Nation.
Yeah, and I'd love to see it go back to EGPAC too, you know, East County Performing Arts Center. I'd love to see that.
Okay, thank you. Michelle.
I love the Magnolia. I absolutely love it. I've been to 10 shows there. I remember when it was EGPAC, I've actually performed on EGPAC stage and back probably in the 80s. It's a great venue, and currently it's an awesome place to go see a concert. I think they should keep it. I love the name. We anticipated making a profit on the Magnolia in about a year, and we actually met that goal in December after first 4 months. So I think we're doing wonderful with it. I think it's going to make great money for El Cajon. It's bringing us a diverse number of acts, everything from ranchero music to Caldean to comedy to rock. Best concert I ever went to was Which One's Pink? And so I want to see them continue operating with Live Nation. I think it's a great partnership.
Okay. Let's move on and talk about housing, which is another huge issue. California and the county faces a shortage of housing, especially affordable housing. And SANDAG has some mandates now where they're trying to require each city to build its fair share of affordable housing. So I would like to ask each of you what your priorities are for housing in El Cajon. And also, if you could briefly touch on how you would address complaints. We've had several readers send in variations on questions about issues of habitability of some of these older apartments where there's persistent issues with things like mold and bed bugs. So kind of a two-pronged question there, how you would deal with affordability or if that's your priority for building housing, and how would you address the habitability? And we'll let you go up to 2 minutes on this one because it is a, you know, compound question there. Stephanie.
Well, I think affordable housing should be just that, affordable. And if we have owners and property owners just raising the rents anytime they want to and it's going sky high. I remember I was able to afford an apartment, take care of all my stuff. You can't do that anymore as a single parent. So we need to make housing affordable. There needs to be a rent cap, at least on our mobile home parks, so our seniors, citizens who are on fixed incomes, don't become the next homeless on our streets. That's what it's going to end up being. The only way you solve homelessness is you give these people homes. Can't give somebody a home, but we can make homes affordable. So that could be something the city could be working on. We do have a certain thing that we have to turn into HUD every year, showing them what we have been doing and that's the different things that we are doing to comply with the state's affordable housing codes. And we use a lot of the same things over and over and over on those things. Things that have been projects that have already been taken care of that we're still using on that. So we're not doing anything new. We just got done with the Sunshine Avenue, South Sunshine. That was something that was done and that was awesome, a great thing. But I think they could be a little bit more affordable as far as like taking care of the older structure, the older buildings that have bed bugs and mold and stuff like that. If we could get some of our El Cajon businesses that do that kind of thing in there to do it, that would be a great thing.
Thank you. Humbert, your thoughts on housing.
Are we discussing the RENA numbers? So the state has a regional housing needs assessment numbers that are required. So those numbers are astronomical, especially in El Cajon. But I think I've been a real proponent of the single, the SROs.
SROs?
Yeah, so and successfully they're starting to happen. So like I said, we have 300 units in one area and 200 units in another, and those are very low income, just transitional living from just getting to homelessness and to getting to, credit to be able to have other things. I think we need to do both. I think we also have to do regular housing, but I see ordinances that are just overlapping, overlapping, overlapping. And like I say, we have a company that does permits and processing. And I hate to say it, but El Cajon's very difficult. There are some height requirements that are just crazy. And if you just want to put an architectural fenestration somewhere, you have to go through an entire planning commission situation. If you have to remodel something, and there's a lot of ordinances there. I know I don't want to get into the weeds and get crazy about them, but I would start actually by actually eliminating some and making it easier for developers and for homeowners to remodel, fix, correct their buildings, clean up, and this kind of thing. I also see a lot of people that want to actually give and donate homes or donate complexes to the elderly or the homeless. They can't because of the new environmental regulations and the regulations that, and the ordinances of El Cajon, because you'd have to basically tear down the building and build a new one. So we should fix that.
Thank you very much. Martin, can you speak to the housing issue?
Yes, I can. So the one thing that I would love to see is to be able to do an ADU or a JDU, which is either converting a garage and or building an additional home onto your property, release the restrictions, can not be so confining on the setbacks, make some allowances so the deck can expand and happen. And then, you know, as far as the apartments, we did have an inspection program. And there was a person, L.C. Wright, that headed up that division. But since they made some movement and removed some people out of the building department, building inspectors particularly, they now have stopped the program, which is a real shame. Because he would go through, evaluate, and then tell people, the owners, what needed to be done to bring it up and get rid of this mold and these other issues. So it's a shame, but they were working on it for a while.
Thank you. Michelle.
El Cajon's doing a lot of building right now. When we were out driving around the city, my husband and I noticed there's a lot of houses being built. And what I'd like to see is more housing being built, maybe reduce the impact fees, so that it makes it easier for homeowners or for builders to build a home. But I think what I'd like to see done is maybe some workshops with mortgage brokers and lenders to teach people, financial planners, to teach people how to be a first-time home buyer. I didn't own a home until 2000, so I was not a 20-year-old trying to buy a home. And it was very difficult, but I think there's a certain sense of pride with home ownership. And so, yes, we do need apartments, but I believe that we also need some good homes that people can raise their family in and stay for 20, 30, 40 years. And so I'd like to see some, I'd like to see more education how to buy a home. I've been a loan processor in the past. I've worked with mortgage brokers, worked with real estate agents, and you know, it can be done. You just need to educate people on how to save money and how to get into the home for the first time and get some pride.
Thank you very much. And Charlie, your thoughts on housing and habitability?
I disagree with Humbert. I don't deregulation, it's the wrong way to go. I don't know if he's looking at you know, his donors or self-interest with that answer, but that's the wrong way to go.
We need to
make sure that we have modern homes, modern El Cajon, energy efficient. We got a lot of empty lots we can take advantage of, and bring in building companies, builders who can take advantage of that and create a, not just homes, but bring in an industry with new technologies and modernizing El Cajon. And that's where we need to go, not deregulation.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate that. None of you touched on the issue about the mold and so forth, but just quickly, 15 seconds, 30 seconds each, but can you touch on the issue of landlords who are renting out places where they've maybe done a brief remediation and the problem comes back and tenants are being charged like, you know, $1,000 for getting rid of roaches or mold or something that was there before. Maybe it's more code enforcement officers. Maybe someone wrote in and suggested legislation, a law that would require they guarantee habitability for a certain number of months. But just quickly, does anybody have an idea on that? We'll just go in the same order, but I think Humbert, or we'll let Humbert take that one first.
Number one, Juan, when a shadow is considered a pollutant, you've gone too far with your regulations, okay? So I the other thing is, I would say that yes, the code enforcement can do a good job here with the mold and the issues. I've seen people that have actually called me and said that they don't even have hot water, and these people are basically slumlords. I'd rather code enforcement work on that than people that are trying to put up tents and during COVID and trying to code enforce them for not having adequate engineering for their tents during code enforcement during COVID.
Okay, Martin, how about you?
Actually, I did say something about it. We had an inspection program with the city that I was able to watch over 2.5 years, and they just, one code enforcement man quit, he retired, another one was let go, and now the one that's there is going to be transferred to doing inspections. They've stopped the program. There's a program in place. They were going street by street, apartment by apartment, and now it's ended, which is a shame. So we did have something. It's just now gone. That was from the city.
Okay, Michelle, on habitability.
I think that landlords need to be held accountable for apartments that or houses that are in bad condition. Code enforcement, I believe we already have laws in place for these types of issues, and so we just need to enforce them.
Okay, thank you. And Charlie.
Yes, I was a victim of mold, that there was a leak in a rental unit about 10 years ago underneath the concrete, and we need to hold rental property owners accountable by all means. And maybe my own personal experience makes me biased, but I had to take him to court. I had to go to a county recorder office to find out who the owner was. They didn't show up to court. And even after I was awarded a monetary compensation, I had to wait almost a year for those funds to become, you know, to go to my pocket. So I think this process needs to be faster, quicker, and on behalf of the renter, by all means, yes.
Stephanie, what are your thoughts on the habitability issue?
I have to agree with Martin. I would think that maybe we could do it like they do Section 8. Before you move into any place for Section 8, you have to have an inspection to make sure that everything's up to par and that all the water is running, there's no bed bugs, there's no roaches, all that kind of stuff. If we could have maybe a line that some people could call to the city and say, look, this is what's going on with me. My landlord's doing this and this and that. Can you guys come down here and do an inspection? And then have an inspection come and do that. And if it's not up to par for those people, then they, you know, hit them where it hurts in their pocketbooks. And they'll start picking up the pace and doing what's right for their tenants. So.
Good, thank you. The next couple of questions are about a couple of specific controversies that have arisen in this race. Humbert, the first one is a discrepancy that I'd like to ask you to clear up about discrepancies in the documents regarding your residency in the district. I understand you've been, from the registrar, that you've been registered to vote on North Mollison in the district since 2012. As you mentioned, you've been in it a long time. But when you applied for business license renewal in May, you listed your home address on Falcon Street, which is not in the district. Your wife owns a home where the homeowner exemption on file with the tax assessor's office is also the house on Falcon Street, although she recently re-registered to vote on Mollison. So can you clear up, can you just explain that discrepancy for us and where, you know, you and your lovely wife, you sent a beautiful photo of your wife and daughter, which residence you're living in right now?
We're living in the 1717 North Mollison house, and we've lived there. I do not know why. Because we actually have the document that shows that we registered our businesses in 1717 North Mollison. So I'm wondering who's trying to pull a fast one and say that we actually registered as 1400 Falcon Lane. We never did that. We live in 1717. We've always lived in 1717.
Okay.
And I'm the person that actually was born and is a native of the 2nd District. That's the whole reason why I'm running in the 2nd District, because I see a lot of people that have come out from out of the 2nd District. And I said, no, I've lived there my entire life. I want to be there.
Okay.
Now, my wife does own a condo there and in the other area, and we do rent that. Mm-hmm. And we do have that. So, but
she has the homeowner exemption.
I also have my two businesses.
She did claim the homeowner exemption, though. And according to the tax assessor, that's under penalty of perjury that you state it's a primary residence to take that. So was that an error with the?
No, we did stay in that for the allotted time that needed to be there for when we first purchased the condo before we started renting it. Yes.
All right. We'll be following up on that. Thank you very much. And I don't think that was an an issue for the other candidates.
I have a question.
Okay,
I have a question. Yes, I do have a question. I believe that we need representation of somebody who lives in our district. And it's from my understanding that Mr. Cabrera's parents live on North Mollison and not him. If I would like to see some kind of rental agreement or some kind of something stating with that his name is on that property, because I don't think that it's fair to the voters to be having somebody on the ballot that doesn't live in our district and doesn't understand what we're going through.
Mr. Cabrera will give you a chance to respond to that.
I don't want to get into my family issue, but my mom is actually very, she needs care. And so I don't want you guys to be slamming my mother because she needs care. And so
she about your mother.
Live in the house and we do live with her. Yes.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. The other issue very briefly on that's been raised is that there was apparently somebody out there put up a fake website in the name of Michelle Mitchell that apparently was intended to provide some deceptive information about voters. So I'd just like to ask the other candidates if you can attest whether, assure the voters whether you knew anything about that or anybody at your campaign had anything to do with it, and how do you think the appropriate remedy would be if it were found that someone here did that? But Charlie.
Yes, I have no knowledge of any of that. This is news to me. I wish her the best, and I don't know how she operates or who was behind that. I cannot comment beyond that.
All right, thank you. Stephanie.
I had heard about it. I think it's wrong. I think it's mudslinging for anybody to have to do that if they think that they can't win on their own, you know, morals and their own standards and their own education, then they shouldn't be running in the race. I think that low blows like that is just unacceptable in elections, and that's what gets people in trouble.
Thank you. Humbert.
I agree with Juan. But I really didn't understand the article very much. I read it very briefly.
Yeah, it wasn't ours. It was, I think, the Union Tribune or someone.
The Union Tribune. So I didn't really comprehend if it was really her, honestly, or if it was somebody else. So,
we'll give Michelle a second to speak to that. But Martin, can you comment on this first, please?
Yes, I can. I did read about it in the UT. And I didn't put a lot of effort into, you know, studying it. I had no part of it. I first found out about it when I read about it, when it did come out in the UT. And it's a shame, you know. We live in a world now where things like this can be done easily by people. And it's just not fair.
Michelle, do you have anything to add?
No. The site has been taken down. I think someone attempted to make me look not as conservative as I am. And that's just not me. Most people don't know me. They don't know who I am. They don't know what I stand for. And the site was opposite of who I am. So I'm just glad that it's taken down. It was picked up by, when it came out, I received text messages and phone calls asking me, what is this about? What are you talking about? Yeah. I was interviewed by the UT and it was picked up by three or four other news sites.
Yeah. Thank you. I can imagine how distressing that would be.
Can we ask if Black lives do matter?
Well, actually, you know what, Humbert, since you brought that up, one of the things that I think for people of color, such as myself, that was so disturbing about this redirection, this mirrored site, is that it suggests there's something wrong with Black Lives Matter. So it suggests there's something wrong with Black Lives. So Humbert just asked the question, and if everyone can weigh in very, very quickly, I think that that's fair on this issue. The August 14th article is very concerning, mainly because it suggests there's something wrong with the premise.
To clarify for people that didn't see it, the site, I guess, among other things, attributed a viewpoint of Michelle's on Black Lives Matter that may not have accurately reflected her viewpoint and various other things. Go ahead, I'll let each of you jump in and answer the question real quick. Michelle?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Black Lives Matter is the belief that Black Lives Matter. Do Black Lives Matter? Michelle?
Yes.
Okay.
Humbert?
Yes, they do. Very, very much so.
Martin?
I would agree. And I'd also add, you know, all lives matter. I do believe in Black Lives Matter, and it's good. But, you know, I have concern for everyone. Does that make sense?
That sure. Hasn't been pressed before, I'm sure. Thank you.
Yes, Black Lives Matter, and not only that, I want every officer and every police department and deputy sheriff to say it, believe it, live it, love it, Black Lives Matter. And right now, that's not the case in those departments.
Okay, Stephanie.
Well, I'm in agreement with Martin. Every life matters to me, everybody's life, whether you're poor, you're rich, you're white, yellow, black, it doesn't matter. Your life matters.
Okay, thank you. COVID-19 has negatively impacted the budgets of many cities, El Cajon included, with added costs to address health concerns, and as we touched on, lower revenues from sales taxes with businesses that have been closed or at lower capacity. So I'd like to ask each of you, if you are elected, what would your top budget priorities be? And also, if there's any more CARES Act money coming in, what would your priority be for using any new relief funds? So two-prong, number one, budget priority, and two, how you might disseminate any future relief funds. Martin.
Okay, well, as far as the budget's concerned, you know, I had made mention of closing down Main Street, and, you know, and not that that's going to save the budget or give us everything that we need, but we do need to generate, you know, tax revenue. That was another issue that I made about zoning. If we could reduce some of the zoning, change it without major costs, then some businesses could open up. I made reference to Lulu's Market. So we need to generate income by reducing the issues to go and comply with the city, meaning easier processing. And that's what I would say. What was the second question? That was part one.
About if there were any further CARES Act funding for coronavirus relief, well, how would you prioritize using that?
Well, to any businesses that it could go to help out, to keep them open. I mean, that would make sense to me because this is going to end. It ends soon. And when it does, we're going to get going. We just got to be prepared for it. That's all.
Thank you. Michelle, your views on budget priority, your top budget priority, and how you would prioritize any future COVID relief funds.
Top budget priority is public safety. And any future CARES funding, we need to look at it and make sure that those who have not received before gets a little bit apart. But really what it comes down to, open things up. If you can go to Target, if you can go to Walmart and there are restrictions there, and the mom and pop shop, the little restaurant, they can open with their restrictions, then we wouldn't need any more funding because everybody will be back to work. Yes, it'll be at a little bit of a reduced attendance, and we can maybe divide the funds up a little bit, but open things up and let people go back to work. We've had a 600% increase at least in suicide calls, domestic violence. So open things up, and I got too far. Sorry.
Okay. Thank you. And Charlie, your priorities for the budget and for COVID relief, if any.
Priorities for budget, make sure that the city employees are taken care of. And I say that cautiously. Let's not, you know, use whatever it is that we have available, just throw it out there, you know. So but make sure that we take care of them. And two, in relation to COVID, we need to do what they did in downtown San Diego with hepatitis, clean the sidewalks. I don't see that done. Okay. Two, virtual learning is very difficult. Why don't we have a Wi-Fi station on the high rental areas so that, you know, people are not fighting for Wi-Fi signal and the best virtual learning device, you know, that works with Wi-Fi. So I think those two would go a long ways to show the community, show El Cajon that we are doing what's best for the city, for the community.
Thank you very much. And Stephanie, your priorities for budget and any future COVID funds.
Okay, well, our budgeting has been relying on employee pension, the employee pension funds to balance out our budget instead of paying the CalPERS as the benefits were earned. So now our city is in really big debt because of that. And we're 205 million, something like that. It's up in the millions. And we're at a 7% rate of that. So I think maybe a way to cut down on our budget is not giving a cost of living increase to our employees that are already making over $20,000 a month. That's a they're making as much as some people take a whole year to make. Maybe we could maybe cut that down, because I don't think everybody, all the employees are getting a cost of living raise like the high budget employees are. They're getting a raise every single year. That's costing them the city money. We could maybe take that down a little bit to 5 years, you know. We could bring a lot of revenue back to our city like that. I think that we need to balance our budget and not balance the way it has been, but balance it to where we're getting this back up. We're reusing some of our revenue and we're starting to make money again instead of losing it.
Thank you, Stephanie. And Humbert, what would your number one budget priority be, and how would you expend any future CARES Act funding?
Well, the budget, as far as it goes, Stephanie is actually correct in a lot of her speaking. And I remember Stephanie and I were actually at the city council when they were attempting to give themselves a raise. And, you know, I have to applaud Stephanie again. But, you know, we've been there. We're part of the watching, seeing what's going on. We just haven't shown up at the last second. And so we kind of can speak to that, those items. And we actually asked them a couple years ago to take a look at this. And I'm surprised this is coming up. As far as the CARES Act spending, I think we need to make sure that the people that are used to get the CARES Act spending the very first go around actually are using it for what they were said they were using it for, and then we can disperse it properly.
Okay, thank you very much. We're going to have one more, a real short question, and then we're going to go on to the closing statements. So I would like to ask each of you in about 30 seconds or so, what endorsements you have that you're most proud of? Let's see, Humbert went last. I think it's Charlie's turn to go first. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, the one that I'm most proud of is Estela de los Rios, candidate for City Council District 4. We have an incredible time. We're doing really well and a lot of traction on what's best, you know, candidacy and what's best for El Cajon, the city of El Cajon, and the people out there. So I'm very proud about that. I you know, it puts a smile to my face 24 hours of the day.
Thank you. Stephanie. Your endorsement.
Well, my most proudest endorsement is from Planned Parenthood. They're a great organization. They have done so much work out in the community. I'm so proud of that endorsement. I'm also proud of another endorsement from the San Diego Construction and Trades Building Commission or Council. I'm very proud of that. That's my second time having theirs. Run Women Run. And that's my second time having their endorsement. And I've got the endorsement of the San Diego County Democratic Party for the second year, too.
Okay, thank you very much, Stephanie. Humbert, what endorsements are you most proud of?
Yeah, I have the endorsement of Senator Joel Anderson, Pastor Harold Brown, Councilman Bob McClellan, Carl DeMaio, Pacific Southwest Association of Realtors, Latin American Political Association, and the Latin Police Officers Association. But I'll tell you what, the ones that I'm most proud of is the pages and pages of the everyday citizen. The Chaldeans, the African Americans, the everybody that makes up El Cajon, the people, the World War II veterans, the people that are the bus drivers and the school teachers and the people that live in the second district and they're just struggling to make ends meet. Those are the ones that I'm very much most proud of.
Thank you very much, Michelle. Oh, I'm sorry, Martin. I didn't mean to skip you there, Martin. What endorsements are you most proud of?
Well, interesting that you asked. I just got confirmation from Daryl Isett that he's endorsing me. That's very good. And he's a great guy.
Thank you. Wow. Michelle, how about you?
I think the endorsement that I'm most proud of is the El Cajon Firefighters Association. I also appreciate the endorsement from the El Cajon Police Department or the Police Officers Association. I also have San Diego County Gun Owners Association, the Mobile Home Owners Association, and the County Assessor, Ernest J. Dronenberg, my family, my neighbors.
Okay.
They're all special to me. This is my first time in politics, so all of this is very special to me.
I really want to thank all of our candidates before we go to the closing statements. You know, it's so important in this era of COVID when you can't go out and hold events and the public can't meet you face-to-face very much. It's hard to even go precinct walking. So it's really important. And I think that the people of El Cajon are very fortunate to have some choices, to have
you know, all of these candidates seem like they've been very involved in the community. They're very concerned. They've learned a lot about the issues. And so it's really nice for the public to be able to have some clear choices and know where you stand on all of the important issues facing El Cajon. So with that, we're going to go to closing statements. You can each take a minute to tell us why you think you'd be the best person to represent El Cajon. And also, I'd like to tell you, you can take an extra 15 seconds and tell us what you think is the best thing about living in El Cajon so we can live on a end on a positive note about the city known as the Valley of Opportunity. Stephanie, you're first.
Great. I think that I'm the best person for El Cajon because I'm a normal citizen that likes to go out there and I fight for what I believe in, what I believe is right. And if I know it's wrong, I'm going to stand up and fight for it. I fight for everybody that I know. I help everybody that I know. I've got a loving heart. I'm a warm, wonderful person. I have a great personality and a beautiful smile. I know that I would be the best person to sit up there because I will listen. I like to listen. I like to understand where other people are coming from. I don't believe that you judge somebody until you've walked a day in their shoes. You have to be from El Cajon to understand El Cajon. I am not scared to walk down any street in my city, no matter what time, day or night it is, because I'm confident in myself that I know the people. And you need to, that's what it's all about. When you see the need for somebody that is in need, stop and help. Understand. And when I saw the need at El Cajon City Council that some of the things weren't right in my city, I stood up and I say something. And I don't get back down and I don't shy away from it because that's just the kind of person that I am. And my most best thing about El Cajon is that when you're driving on the 8 and you come around that bend and you can see that valley right there, that's the most beautiful thing I love about El Cajon of all. The moon setting over that valley is just, we're a beautiful city and we're diverse and there's no place else like it on earth. You could spend the morning and playing in the snow and spend the evening at the beach having a bonfire. There's no other place in the world you can do that at but El Cajon.
Thank you so much, Stephanie. Humbert, your closing statements and what you like best about El Cajon.
Well, I'll start by saying I like the people of East County and El Cajon, especially the people of the second district, which are very hard-working people, and they really put their heart into everything that they do. They take care of each other, and they really, really do put their hearts out, and that's why I raised my entire family here. My entire family grew up here. I worked for small companies, big companies, Fortune 500 companies, and I always came back to El Cajon. El Cajon's been is the greatest place that there is, and so that's why I want to represent El Cajon. The biggest thing is that I want to get endorsements from the people that are the citizens that I've walked the districts for day to day, help them get employed, help them get citizenship, help them from the way that El Cajon reached out and helped us when we first came here. When my parents first came here, they actually, a lot of great, beautiful hearts opened up and helped us. And I think that El Cajon still can be that and still can be a great place. I've actually done the work. I've actually worked hard for the citizens. I've volunteered for so many different places. I was Citizen of the Year. And I hope that I can achieve the vote of the people of the second district, because my heart is with them and my door will always be open. My telephone will always be there and I'll always be an open door policy that you can contact me as a citizen of the second district at any time. And I will listen to you. Thank you very much. And I hope, and I thank everybody that was here and was participating, and Miriam and all of you that are actually running as well. I know it's a hard work and I thank you all.
Thank you very much, Humbert. Martin, let's have your closing thoughts and what you love best about El Cajon.
Sure. Well, I do want to thank you and everybody involved for this opportunity and the participants as well. And, you know, I have a lot of experience and I love to share that. I love to help. It just fills my heart. And when I have the opportunity, as like when I was an inspector, there are many people with many problems. And I was instrumental in putting effort in so that they could get what they needed to get done. I really tried hard and I really worked hard. And I know many people and I've met many people in El Cajon. And my favorite thing here is I moved out here when I was younger. I was 21 years old and I got my first apartment. It was in Lakeside. And I came out here because it was affordable, because in town things were very expensive.
here you can get a nice place for a fair price. And in doing so, I fell in love with the East County, and I stayed out here my whole life. So I was brought in just for pure economics because that's all I could afford, and I stayed here because I love it. And I want to say one more thing. I just simply want to say that, you know, the constituents, I need you to help me so that I can help you in this election being your next District 2 City Council member. And I look forward to your support. Thank you.
Martin, thank you very much. Michelle, could you give us your closing statement and what you like best about El Cajon?
Thank you, Miriam. Thank you to participating in this forum. I want to bring ethics, transparency, and hard work to the office of City Council. I'm a problem solver. That's what I do at work, is I solve people's problems. When they can't get it through a department, they call me and I get it done. I've already been accomplishing those things here in my district without even being on the City Council. I've got a street light put in my cul-de-sac, the cul-de-sac next to me. I've got a drug house monitored and people arrested for doing drugs on our cul-de-sac. So I'm trying to clean up the street. I'm a member of the El Cajon cleanup group, so where I go out and pick up after people, pick up their trash, pick up mattresses. I'm a hard worker, I'm intelligent, and I know how to solve problems. What I love about El Cajon, it's home. It's where I raise my family. It's where my grandchildren are. And my grandchildren will probably have their children here. El Cajon is home, and what more can you say? It's got everything here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Michelle. And Charlie, we'll let you have the last word here. Let's have your final thoughts, your closing statement, and what you love best about El Cajon.
Okay, first, thank you, Medium, and your crew. Thank you for this opportunity to speak in the forum. You want to learn more about me, to everyone listening, and you know, just go to my website, juancarlosmercado.com. And I want to end it with this. I want to end it with El Cajon has an enormous diversity, a lovely diversity, and we need to do more to make sure that our city council represents that diversity. Not just, you know, those that were born here, you know, like Cabrera likes to, you know, toot his horn, but to the immigrants that just got here. Why can't they be a city council member? You know, that the one that got here 2 years ago that's struggling to learn English and assimilate, but likes El Cajon. So we need to make sure that we include everyone. Diversity is awesome. That's where we need to go. That's where El Cajon needs to go. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I hope all of you will find ways to stay active and engaged and involved. Good luck to whoever wins, and may the rest of you all continue to contribute your great ideas to the city of El Cajon.
Thank you, Miriam, for doing this. You're awesome.
Well, thank you. We will be posting, if anyone tuned in late and you're watching on Facebook, we will be posting a video of this as soon as we can get it processed, and we will be putting it up on Facebook, YouTube, and on our site at eastcountymagazine.org. And if anybody is not yet registered to vote, please go to sdvote.com. You can get registered. Check your registration if you're already registered. You'll be getting mail-in ballots this year in California that you can either mail in or drop off at any one of a number of polling places and some super centers that will be open ahead of time. So with that, I want to just thank everybody so much and good luck. And
thank you.
We appreciate all the great questions from everybody. And we also want to thank the Facebook Journalism Project for funding and supporting our series of virtual candidate forums during the COVID-19 era. And listeners, you can find that full candidate forum at eastcountymagazine.org. With that, we're going to conclude our forum and say good night.
Good night. Thank you.